everyone. I'm Ashley McManus, Senior Director of Global Marketing at SmartEye. Welcome to Human-Centric AI Podcast, where each episode we interview thought leaders doing cutting-edge work in the AI space. A little bit about us. SmartEye was founded over 20 years ago, and we have been known for developing some of the world's most sophisticated eye tracking systems. In recent years, we have expanded our technology and are now known as the global leader in human insight AI, tech that understands, supports, and predicts human behavior in complex environments. Our multimodal software and hardware solutions provide unprecedented human insight in automotive and behavioral research, supported also by Affectiva and iMotions, companies we acquired in 2021. In automotive, we are leading the way towards safer and human-centric mobility through driver monitoring systems and interior sensing solutions. Our tech is embedded in next-generation vehicles and available as a standalone aftermarket solution for existing vehicles, fleet, and small volumes. Today's episode features SmartEye Deputy CEO Dr. Rana Alkalyubi talking about humanizing the in-cabin experience. In a technology-dominated world, there is an increasing need to bridge the gap between man and machine. Making our interactions with technology more seamless and intuitive will enable us to lead smarter, more productive, healthier, and happier lives. To help achieve this ambitious goal, Rana explores how human-centric AI delivers better automotive safety and more engaging mobility experiences that enhance comfort, wellness, and entertainment. Drawing from her decades of work on emotion AI, Rana will discuss the future of the in-cabin experience and the imperative to realize this in an ethical manner. Let's listen in to learn more.
So if you don't know me, I'm Rana Alkalyubi. I'm deputy CEO of SmartEye, and I am co-founder of Affectiva, and I was CEO until we joined forces with SmartEye about, 14 months ago now. My background is in computer vision and machine learning. I did my PhD way back when at Cambridge University and basically built one of the very first emotionally intelligent kind of machines. So I did my PhD around facial expression analysis and mapping that to emotions and emotion understanding. And then towards the end of my PhD, it was like the most serendipitous meeting ever, which basically changed the trajectory of my life. I met this MIT professor, Professor Rosalind Picard, who had started the field of affective computing. She wrote the book, Affective Computing, which in 1996, I read it in 1997. And I was like, oh my God, this is like the coolest thing ever. And decided to pivot my research to focus on that. But I had never actually met her in person or spoken to her. So in 2004, she was giving a talk at Cambridge, the original Cambridge in England, in the UK, I guess. And she emailed the lab, the computer science department at Cambridge University, and she said, you know, I have like a little bit of time to meet some students. So, you know, this is the time I have. And, you know, students were allowed to sign up. And I signed up to meet her. And we ended up having an amazing time. I spent weeks preparing for it like we do. I had to make sure the demo worked. And we met and she basically said, come work with me as a postdoc. So I did. I started my postdoc at MIT by the time I graduated. It was 2006. And we co-founded Affectiva together in 2009. It was quite the ride. I'm so grateful to everybody on the team who kind of was part of that journey. And then, as everybody knows, we joined forces with SmartEye. The summer of 2021. So I've been on this mission of humanizing, bridging the gap between humans and machines for 20 plus years. And I am particularly focused on bringing social and emotional intelligence to our machines because I believe that that's a really important way to humanize technology. All right, so why does this matter? Well, AI is ingrained in the fabric of our lives. It's acting on our behalf. It's actually becoming mainstream. A lot of people, we probably on our team realize that, but a lot of people don't really know that. Well, it's becoming mainstream, and it's actually taking on roles that were traditionally done by humans. Perhaps it's helping you become healthier, or it's driving your car, or it's actually like hiring your next coworker. So, it's taking on these roles that were traditionally done by humans, but there's something missing, right? It has a lot of high IQ, high cognitive intelligence, and a lot of people are focused on fixing that. but no emotional intelligence. And that's often like overlooked. People don't really think about the human centric elements of this technology and what would it take? Because, you know, back in the day when computers were like in the back office and nobody ever interacted with them, it was fine. But now, like often, you know, that's definitely true for me. My phone is the first thing I check in the morning. It's the last thing I check at night. I know it's a bad habit, but it's the truth. And, you know, how do you build technology that incorporates these aspects of our humanity? And that's really important. And that's been the focus of my work. And I do believe that that is central to the work we do at SmartEye. Well, how do we do that, though? How do we bring emotional intelligence and social intelligence into our technology? Well, we have to go back and look at how humans connect. And as it turns out, only 7% of how we all connect with each other is the actual words we use. 93% is nonverbal, and it's split kind of equally between your facial expressions, your hand and, you know, hand gestures, body posture, and your vocal intonation, how you actually say these words, like how much energy is in your voice, how fast are you speaking, your pauses, your prosodic, you know, your prosodic features in the voice. That's also very important. And so if we are able to capture and quantify that 93%, then we can really bring emotional intelligence and nonverbal kind of intelligence to our machines. So yeah, as I said, I've been on this mission to humanize technology with emotion AI. When we spun out Affectiva, that became our goal. And today we are used our media analytics business unit. I'm sure you've hopefully heard some of the work we do in that business unit. It's run by Graham Page, who has, I don't know, Graham, like probably 28 years of experience in this space, plus 28 plus years of experience in this place. So our technology today is used by 28% of the Fortune Global 500 companies and 70% of the world's largest advertisers. It's deployed in 90 countries around the world. So we've basically been able to build this technology and deploy it and scale it around the world, and we're able to quantify people's responses to a variety of content. It might be a 30-second video ad, or it might be, I don't know, Indian Matchmaker on Netflix, right? Which I've just binge watched. So we're able to quantify moment by moment how people respond to this content and emotionally engage with this content. And then we take all of this data and we're able to predict things like, okay, are we going to buy the product? Are people going to tell their friends about it? Is it actually going to affect your perception of the brand and brand loyalty? So it's very powerful, and there's a lot of upside for this technology. I mean, there's a lot of adjacent markets beyond just testing reactions to content. You can test reactions to products. You could use it to understand product innovation. There's a lot of user experience and customer experience. That's a big bucket. And so that was a lot of our focus until we recognized that there was a lot of interest from the automotive industry, and that's how we ended up joining forces with SmartEye. So in 2018, 2019, we got a lot of interest from OEMs at Affectiva to apply our technology to the car. They wanted to understand the emotional experience of not just the driver, but passengers in the vehicle. So we adapted our technology to work in the car. And then fast forward a couple more years, Martin and I had been in touch, and we decided it made sense to bring SmartEye's experience in bringing automotive grade products to the market. They've been doing this, you know, for 20 years by the time we had spoken, and we have experience with data and machine learning, and it made a lot of sense to join forces to kind of bring this interior sensing solution to the market. I always say this, and it's so true. I've actually never met a CEO slash founder who had the same, like who used the same words to describe their vision of the future. And Martin, I remember when we first started talking, I was like, you know, your vision is to bridge the gap between humans and machines. And our vision is to bridge the gap between humans and machines. And it just struck me that we had the same vision of the future of how our technology can sit and can reimagine not only human computer communication, but ultimately human to human connections and communication. That was really powerful. So that's our vision at SmartEye, to bridge the gap between humans and machines. And to do that, we're defining a new category, human insight AI. We kind of debated a lot. We actually spent a good part of the last year coming up with what is that new category we're defining. At Affectiva, it was emotion AI. SmartEye is well known for eye tracking, but we're evolving beyond these two buckets. So the umbrella bucket is human insight AI, and it's basically technology that understands, supports, and predicts human behaviors. It could be your emotions, it could be your activities, it could be your mental state, your cognitive state, all of that. We're able to understand all of these states and behaviors in complex environments, like a car. So yeah, what if we made vehicles human-centric, right? And that results in better safety, better customer experience, a more comfortable ride, and overall better cars. So of course, the entry to this space is driver monitoring, and DMS has really become a must-have technology in vehicles. And as you all know, SmartEye already has 1 million cars on the road with SmartEye technology, which is a pretty awesome milestone. And that's just the beginning. But DMS is kind of the must-have. It's the entry into the vehicle, but we are opening the aperture. And actually, let me actually stop and share a little story about that. When we first started, this is now at Affectiva, when we first started exploring this whole space, we had a lot of data. We had over, maybe at the time, 10 million face videos that we had collected via our media analytics business unit. So that was all like people exploring and engaging with content. And we were like, okay, are we even going to see any facial expressions? Anything on the face when we move to this, you know, driver monitoring environment, the car environment. And so we started collecting data and we sent people out with cameras. Of course, we asked for their opt-in and their permission. And we essentially recorded these videos. So I'll show you, we have permission to share a couple of these videos. So I'll show you some examples of it. And again, this, if you're in the automotive solutions business unit, this is not going to be surprising to you. But this is an example of a person who is like literally like asleep, right? This is pretty dangerous. And this video goes on and on. And it's a pretty easy state for us to detect, right? Our technology is able to detect with eye closure and even the head pose and the head movement. We're able to pretty easily detect that this guy is basically asleep. And what I also find really fascinating is that we're able to track his daughter. I'm assuming it's his daughter in the background as well. And so, yeah, the car can really fix this, should be able to intervene and fix this. Here's another example. This is actually data that we collected in Cairo. So she has one phone and she's texting while driving. She has two phones in her hand. So it's not just look at her eye gaze and her head movement, but also combine that with object detection. And that's advanced distraction detection. So again, her hands are off the wheel, her eyes are off the road, very dangerous, and we can intervene. So anyway, so these are just some examples of the data we've collected. We are continuing to collect a ton of this data. And we see these are people who opted in to get recorded. So they know that they're being recorded, but you still see these behaviors. Just on the theme of the driver still, some of the amazing work we're doing is around sudden illness detection, but also intoxication research. So as it turns out, 1.3 million people around the world die in road crashes, and 20% of those fatalities are alcohol related. So we are collaborating with a number of organizations to assess the applicability or the efficacy of using computer vision and machine learning to detect driver intoxication. So there's a lot of interest from OEMs in doing that. All right, so that was very focused on the driver. But as I said, we have this, we had for a number of years this hypothesis that the aperture is going to increase and it's not just going to be about the driver, but it's going to also be about the experience of the other passengers in the vehicle. And that is basically driver monitoring in addition to cabin monitoring. And we call that whole bucket interior sensing or interior sensing AI. So I want to kind of walk through some of the use cases. The very first use case is around advanced safety with better interior sensing, right? So it's occupant monitoring. Are people seated properly in the vehicle? How many occupants are in the car, right? Are there like four occupants or like seven, right? Which sometimes happens in some parts of the world, like maybe Cairo. So we're able to use not just face detection, but body pose and key body point detection to understand the different poses of people in the car and also the activities that they're doing. You can combine that with object detection, like you can see here. Ryan is distracted while driving because he's got his phone in his hand, and you can tell that he's, you know, texting. Another example, of course, a key feature that we're being asked for is child seat detection and child in a seat detection. These are two different things. Child seat detection, you can obviously do pretty well with a computer vision approach. If the child is in the car seat, especially if the car seat is turned around, it's kind of harder to do that using just computer vision. But we're looking at solutions, and multimodal could be a really great option here as well. All right, then, kind of, what are the use cases that we can unlock if we can understand the mood and emotions of people in the car? So obviously you can detect if people are having fun in the car. And one of the great examples of how you can leverage that data is to create a trip highlight reel. So imagine if every time, you know, you're driving with your kids somewhere, it's a road trip, and every time, you know, a certain number of people for a certain period of time exhibit a smile or laughter, it creates kind of a montage of the trip. I think it would actually be cool to create a montage of the trip with the kids like blowing up too. That would be kind of fun. You can always blackmail them with these videos when they're a bit older. But these are kind of social applications of mood and emotion in a detection in a car. But it's not just that, right? Like, what if your car could detect road rage and respond accordingly? This particular event was in Brussels, and so we pulled out data about European drivers. I think we have equivalent data for US road rage. I have not seen any data, for example, about road rage in Cairo, but I can tell you from personal experience that it definitely happens, and it's definitely a problem. So it turns out European drivers, if some of you are on the call, 84% of you are afraid of other drivers' aggressive behavior. 52% of you, like half of you, have insulted or sworn at other drivers in the past. You honk your horn impatiently. You've tailgated a driver who's annoying. And 22% of you have admitted to getting out of the car to argue with another driver. Yikes. But, and this cracks me up, 97% of you have a positive opinion of your own driving. So that's like hilarious. So road rage is an issue, and I think there's an opportunity to, if we're able to detect that. Again, I think there's a big question on how the car would respond if it detects some of these emotions, and it's how we partner closely with our OEM partners to kind of figure out, okay, what's the right response? Because you don't want the car to say, hey, you're angry, I'm going to like da-da-da-da-da, that's just going to make you angrier, right? So that kind of, we're in the sensing bucket, but how you do... How we partner with OEMs to determine like how the car responds, and it's going to depend on the OEM and their brand and how they want the experience to unfold. I also kind of want to share a personal experience. Some of you may have heard me talk about this before. I think it was 2011 or 2012. I was going through my divorce, and I had a Volvo at the time, and I remember getting into my car, and I was pretty distraught. I had just met with my father-in-law, and it was just like I was just in tears, and I was absolutely distracted. And I got in the car, and I was clearly distraught, right? And I started driving, and I just did not see this truck cut me off, and I just hit and slammed right into the truck, and my car got totaled, and my shoulder got dislocated. But in the big scheme of things, I was very lucky. And I just look back at that moment in time, and I wonder, like, what if my Volvo had interior sensing AI? What if it was able to detect that I was not fit to drive? Could it have fine-tuned the brakes of the car a little bit? Maybe it would have intervened. I don't know what the car would have done, but I think the car could have known that I was just really not attentive to the driving task and was distracted. And so I think there's a lot of applications where we can leverage emotion AI to make the experience, you know, the driving experience both safer but also more comfortable for the driver and the passengers. So another area where we're exploring is for backseat passengers. Like, what if you could personalize the content experience? So now that you can detect how many people are in the vehicle and what they're doing and their mood, you can also personalize the content that they're watching. And we have a ton of experience doing that on the media analytics side of the house. So we can bring that expertise in. I think there's a lot of opportunity to adapt other aspects of the car as well. It could be the temperature of the vehicle. It could be even simple things like if this person in the backseat was a kid and they were watching Frozen for the 10th time, but they fall asleep, then maybe you dim the lights and you stop the Frozen movie, right? To give them an opportunity to rest a bit. So there's a lot of ways we can adapt and customize the interior of the car once we know how people inside it are feeling and what's their behavior. And it's one of the areas that I'm very excited about is the overlap or the intersection of health and wellness and your car. We spend a lot of time in our vehicles, right? And so the car could become the next wellness center. And actually, when we were preparing this presentation, we did a lot of research around who are the OEMs who are investing in this space. And a lot of them are. They've already created proof of concept vehicles where the car can measure things like your heart rate or galvanic skin response, maybe even brainwave or CO2 levels and use all of that information. And this is where our iMotions team comes in because we have a ton of experience fusing multimodal sensors and signals. And that's going to be the way to go. Like if we want to understand truly the state of the passengers in the vehicle, it's going to have to be a multimodal approach. So once you've got all these different sensors, different signals, you combine all of that, you can identify things like frustration levels, stress levels, sudden illness, nausea. And once again, you can take all of this information and adapt it you can adapt the car, you can change the lighting, you can change the temperature, you can change the sound, you can diffuse aromas. So there's a lot of different things you can do once you have all this information. So I'm excited to, I think we have an opportunity as a company to spearhead this area, right? So I'm excited to partner with OEMs and maybe propose proof of concepts where we bring our multimodal fusion capabilities and kind of imagine what a car would look like if it were a wellness center. And then what I like to think of a car as just a robot on a wheel. Right? It's just a very specific instance, basically, of a robot. And so there's a lot of applications of everything we're doing in human inside AI in the robotics space. Obviously, social robots are a great kind of clear application of human inside AI because a social robot needs to be social. And for it to be social, it needs to have eyes and ears and all of these sensing capabilities. So it's a space, I still think social robots are early, but it's a space that I'm kind of watching closely. I think we have an opportunity to play a big role there. Back at Affectiva, we partnered with Pepper, the robot, and we were the emotion AI brain of that robot for a while. We also partnered with Jibo, who, Jibo was an MIT spin-out, and we also were the emotion capabilities of that robot. You may have all seen, what's the name of Tesla's robot? I'm blanking on the robot's name, but I was watching the unveiling of the robot, and I was like, oh God, it's so scary. Like somebody needs to bring a human-centered approach to but anyway, robotics is definitely a very interesting area that I think I'm excited. I think at some point it's going to be the right time to play in that space. All right. So, as you all know, so there are a lot of applications of human inside AI across many, many industries. We happen to be focused on automotive and media analytics and kind of the research space in more broadly with research instruments and iMotions and media analytics. But there are many applications beyond, right? So we talked about robotics. There's applications in the health space, aviation, retail. I really do believe that eventually, if we play this right as a team and as a company, we are going to play a big role in this technology becoming ubiquitous and becoming the de facto human-machine interface. But there are big ethical challenges of building this technology, and I really want us as a team, and kind of I urge us as a team to think about this and prioritize that. So the first, we like to think of this as in two buckets, like the ethical development of AI and the ethical deployment of AI. So the biggest problem, in my opinion, with the ethical development of AI is how do we mitigate data and algorithmic bias, right? Because once you build bias into these algorithms and then you deploy them at scale, you've basically accentuated the problem, right? And you've basically exponentially multiplied this bias in society, and you just kind of deployed it at scale. So that's a problem. So how do we do that? It requires a significant investment in data. And it's not just the quantity of the data, it's the diversity of the data. And collecting diverse data is actually challenging. We have to be intentional about it. We have to be really thoughtful about it. If we don't, it's so easy to, it's so easy to just collect data from people we know around us, and that might not be the most diverse population. We have data collection labs. We have on-the-road data collection, which is very important. We have our own data annotation team, but we obviously also partner with data annotation companies around the world. I think it's so important to invest in our data infrastructure and our data platform. You know, it may not be the sexiest part of what we do at SmartEye, but I can assure you it's like the most important. So if you have an opportunity to help or join the data team, I think this is, I think for AI companies in general, it's at the core of what makes these companies special. So our ability to shepherd data from collection to annotation to then making it available to the machine learning team, and then they are able to train and sample and validate, and then we repeat this process over and over again. The faster we can go through the cycle, we create this flywheel effect, and we just create a bigger and bigger gap with our competitors. It's awesome. So I just think point number five is like, I can't underscore enough how important it is. And then last but not least, synthetic data, right? Like collecting actual data is super expensive. It's very time consuming if you especially include annotation. Synthetic data, we can fill gaps around diversity, right? So if we know that we have a gap in a certain kind of profile of individuals, well, we can create thousands of synthetic human beings. And then we can create easily synthetic scenarios too. And so that's a big area in this space. So yeah, synthetic data is a game changer. We've already developed our own in-house tools where we're able to simulate new individuals and new scenarios, but we're also able to take video that we've already recorded, right? So we can take all of the videos that we've already recorded in the real world and basically resynthesize it into different, slightly different scenarios, slightly different conditions. So that's really powerful too. And I think, I think there's a lot more we can do there. And I'm glad we're investing in this space. All right. So that was all the ethical development of AI. What about the ethical deployment? Like, what questions should we ask? Well, what is really fascinating about all of this is your car and your phone and your other technologies are going to know a lot about you, right? Like all of this data, it's really personal data. So where do we draw the line around privacy and consent and opt-in? And I believe very strongly that everything we do has to be consent-based and opt-in-based. People need to know that there is a camera in the vehicle and that this is how it works. This is the kind of data it's collecting or not. And and the example I like to give there is a couple of years ago, I was in the market for buying a new car, and I remember looking at a BMW, and the sales guy was like, "Yeah, it has gesture recognition." And I was like, "Oh, curious. Like, how does it do gesture recognition?" And he did not I don't know if he didn't know or he didn't want to disclose that there was basically a camera, an optical sensor in the vehicle. And I think that needs to change. I think there needs to be a very open conversation about what this technology does, who has access to the data. Obviously, none of the data gets recorded when we deploy this technology, which is great. But that needs to be clear. And that's obviously a design decision that we and other players in this space have taken. So, privacy is very important. It also means that, and I feel very strongly about this one, it also means that the scenarios where people are not explicitly giving consent to this technology kind of collecting data about them, I want us to stay away from these industries. And I've been pretty vocal and pretty public about, I do not want our technology to be used in surveillance and security applications where people do not have an opportunity to say, you know what, I do not want you to be collecting this type of data about me. And way back at Affectiva, we've made a very clear decision not to entertain these scenarios in these industries. And we've probably turned down and turned away millions of dollars of funding and revenue. But I feel strongly that at the end of the day, like, we're better off as a team, as a company, and as humanity for like having this clear stance. Definitely until there are clear legislation and regulation around how we use this technology in public spaces. And it was one of the things that Martin and I spent a lot of time discussing too when we were deciding to join forces. So anyway, the best way to ensure that you are prioritizing ethics is to have a diverse team. And by the way, I want to say we were the only company in the entire in-cabin sensing event that talked about this. And so I'm proud of that. If we are intentional and thoughtful about creating a diverse team, not just in terms of obviously gender and ethnicity and age, but also backgrounds, right? We don't all have to be machine learning scientists. I think people with a humanities background or like art historians or musicians, like that's amazing because you bring a different perspective to the table. And I think that's what makes us stronger.
I love how Rana stressed how first and foremost, our focus is always on advancing automotive technologies to save lives and how interior sensing enables several advanced safety features. As a mom of two little ones, one important functionality we work on to me is child and child seat detection, which helps determine if a child is left behind in a vehicle unattended. What really resonates with me is that something like this can help avoid tragic deaths due to vehicular heat stroke. And as anyone who has driven around with kids knows, that they often cause distractions. So child and even pet detection can provide important inputs to promote safer driving behavior. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. So don't forget to subscribe to our human-centric AI podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening for new episodes. We're also on social media, so please reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram to share any feedback you have on the show. Don't forget to rate and comment with your feedback to help make the podcast more discoverable for others. Until next time, thanks for listening.